And happy Wednesday to everybody. I am Michael Holt. I'm your host each and every Wednesday for the Mind of the Magi. And what we do is we focus on different ways for you to kind of improve your life, take control of your life, think about things a little bit differently, expand your reality, and actually kind of like give you some tools that allow you to kind of take charge again and stuff without drugs and without, you know, the normal kind of ways that we deal with things. So each week what I do is we look for guests that kind of can enlighten and give us a different kind of idea of where we're going to go. And this week we have a fantastic guest with us. We have Dr. Albert Garoli. Tell me a little bit about yourself before we get started. You've written a book, The Evolutionary Glitch. I have it right in front of me right at the moment. But before we get into kind of like some of the principles of that book and stuff, what's some of the history of how you came about in order to come up with this book?
So I studied Ayurvedic medicine and surgery in India. And I think this land was inspirational to me in many ways. One of those ways is to consider into therapy the strong effect of the psyche. And that also enlightened me on the fact that human beings are pretty much the masters of their own destiny through their actions, through their mistakes sometimes, wrong food, wrong behavior. And this also sparked this research on neurobiology just probably 10 years ago when I started to work with the artificial intelligence systems. They were simulating how the brain works. And the interesting pattern that you discover every time you see any kind of a disease, any kind of a problem, basically, you'll see an illogical way or a dysfunctional way to counteract problems. And this was the basic of my understanding, even through all these years of studying medicine. This is also a good philosophy you can apply to solve any kind of problem. So anytime you want to address a problem, you can study how the body does to survive, and you'll have many inspirational tools.
So basically, you were studying medicine, and then you also established a link between the mind and the body itself. Is that correct?
It is perfectly correct, yes. Not only that, but every human being has a different body and different shapes, a different reactivity in the body, different dynamics of the body will respond to the same stimulus in a different way. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes total sense. We are very, very individual people. So
if we want to imagine a world that is more human, free of wars or corruption, pollution, and so on, we have to work principally with the human minds, with human actions. And these are, when you study what humans do to themselves every day, the basics of health and psychological harmony, and also social harmony. So anything that has to do with psychological and physical health has very much to do with what we do every day, what we eat, what kind of exercise we do, but also what kind of information we accept to be true.
Okay, and, all right. So it has to deal with our everyday life itself can actually pinpoint kind of some of these reasons why we go around in circles or why we repeat things that often aren't good for us. Is that what I just understood?
Perfect. You understand very well. It's like incremental changing and very tiny parts of our life, like our breakfast, for instance, or our coffee, the way we wake up, the way we walk. If you sum them up for thousands of times, they would be very influential on an individual scale, but also on a social scale. So tiny habits like watching the news, TV shows. All these bits of information will sum up and, in a way, condition the human brain to into actions. And these actions will definitely result into effects that the body will have to carry. This will also result in different behaviors, and these behaviors might be functional or dysfunctional. So when you have any kind of behavior that is dysfunctional for the individual, you have to backtrack every single action that is performed to see whether there's a mistake in these actions.
Okay, or just something they want to change.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. So you after you got done with your medical studies then, and you were doing this, then this led you into the thing is, what I'm looking at is actually like checking out the whole basic strategy of a person's lifestyle to determine how their lifestyle itself and the things that they're doing in their normal everyday life can lead to answers for the other things that are holding them back.
Correct.
Okay.
There are very clear neurobiological causes for the background of human behavior and cognition. And this, unfortunately, has a little bit of a glitch in it, which is self-confirmation. And this is what the psychologists called the core of the ego, a concept you will find in every Oriental philosophy, the Chinese, the Buddhist, the Indian. You'll always find that as they try to teach us in many years of history and philosophy, our way to analyze the world around us is very biased. And
right.
It is biased in a way that sometimes is dysfunctional to us and to others, and it might create conflict. Just because we're not trained into seeing many points of view, we are trained into reconfirm our original point of view.
Yeah, I mean, I have a kind of a belief that at all times, even if we're wrong, we have to prove we're right.
Yes. Neurologically, the structure of the brain has to confirm, create matches and mismatches of situations. Is an apparently logical machine. The problem of this logic is that it has an inherent error, which is always to confirm the first set of data, which might be wrong.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I've been told that I process things backwards. So.
Yes.
So I look for things that don't agree with what I think. All right, it's really good. And you're currently in Italy, correct?
I am living in Italy right now. I lived for 8 years in New Zealand before.
Was that car? So you're well traveled.
Yes, very much so. I lived in China and in India for years, and New Zealand and Australia. I find that traveling gives me more perspective on the ways different individuals see and perceive the world. The same event is perceived in different ways according to a cultural, biological background. The same event that I have seen interpreted in a certain way, in a certain culture, changes dramatically and is seen in a sometimes opposite way in another culture. And this is very enlightening for me. Because I understand that there is no real perception that is unbiased. There is always a bit of a neurological bias to our perception, but the more we try to mold reality into our model, the more we change its truthful significance, and we lose the nature of it. So we lose opportunities, we lose the truth, we lose other people's points of view, and therefore we don't understand them, and we might cause stress in relations. We don't understand what is good or bad for us and for our body, so we might choose to smoke, and we might drink too much when the body says that is enough. So we try to ignore certain signs that are very important and very physiological, but we condition ourselves to ignore specific signs.
Okay. All right. So it's sort of like we're creating our own reality based on sort of like our desires at the time or whatever it is that we're using to distort or filter it, right?
Very right. We use a sort of filter to interpret reality, and this filter is based on initial conditions. As you can simulate on an artificial intelligence software, you'll see that the initial conditions will try to get confirmation and will discard everything that doesn't confirm the first initial conditions, and so you will end up with a snowball effect, like a giant manifestation of the first condition. But you never have a circuit, a neurological circuit, that is so logical and so unbiased that will accept all possible information. And this is because it will go very early and very easily into a state of overload.
Okay, now that led you then from doing your traveling, doing your study, working with this artificial intelligence and really getting into it, that led you to, the book, The Evolutionary Glitch?
Absolutely, yes. So I wanted to translate this thought into some research-based project, which is more than just an idea or a proposal. It's a connection with more sciences, especially neurobiology and the discovery of mirror neurons, the discovery of how the brain develops and why different people have a different formation, a different structure of neurons, and therefore different behaviors. It was very interesting because there is not only one way to perceive things. There's many ways. And in the book, The Evolutionary Glitch, first of all, we try to pinpoint what the glitch is, and then we try to communicate the manifold manifestation of this glitch, which is not always the same. The ancient philosophies always try to tell us about the dangers of the ego, the perception, the biased perception of the self. And here we are adding something which is connected to morphology. Morphology is also the science that studies shapes, why a liver has a certain shape or a kidney has a certain shape. So in this case, why the brain and certain neurons have a certain shape and connections, and therefore, what is their function? The shape is very much related to the function. If you think of a bone, it must have a specific shape to sustain the weight of the body, and the heart must have a specific shape because it has to pump, it has to work as a pump. And therefore, the structure function principle adapts here to neurology so that the neural map that has a specific shape will affect the body in a specific way, and also it will create specific patterns of behavior. So, for instance, a very logical or a very dendritic, what we call dendritic, it means it looks like a root. It looks like the branches of a tree, and this shape will endow the person with a sense of logical discernment, understanding. Other people are less differentiated. They will only have black and white. They will have no scales of gray in between, just because of their neurons and how they're connected with each other. There are a few studies that describe intelligence, an intelligent person, as a person that has many connections in the brain. So many neurons are connected. The more neurons are connected, the more the intelligence can be capable of solving problems or adapting to the environment. In this case, it's not only the number of connections, but the shape they take. And this will be different egos, or how we call it, personas, where persona is identified with a mask.
Okay, so just to make sure that I'm caught up with you, when we're talking about the different shapes, you're not talking, or are you talking about the shape as far as also the body goes, or are we talking an internal structure of the neural patterns and neural pathways when you're talking about a shape? Both of them be related, or are they separate?
They can be related in a way, but generally I'm talking about the shape of the connections, so the number and the shape and the location of certain neurons that activate will determine certain patterns.
Okay.
For instance, different parts of the body, different parts of the brain will control different parts of our sensory perception. So, for instance, the occipital lobes, the part of the back of the brain, will control the sight. So even if our eyes are perfectly functioning and our nerves are perfectly functioning, if anything goes wrong in that part of the brain, we cannot see.
So the book Evolutionary Glitch is about the human brain development then. Is that correct?
It's very correct. It's about how the brain develops, how it creates its own life, which is sometimes entering, when pathologically, into a state of separation, isolation. And here you have cases where the actual behavior of the person becomes self-destructive. All the bad habits are an example of this. Smoking, drinking, drugs are all an example of self-destruction, which is not something a body physiologically should or would do.
Right. Okay. So, and now... Is that what the glitch is, or is the glitch something more? So when we're talking about this, because you titled it the Evolutionary Glitch, and it has to do with the brain development. So what is the glitch?
You might think of this analogy. For instance, a computer with a perfect software and good data would produce good results. But if you take the same computer that has a perfectly functioning software, but you put erroneous data, you will have wrong results. So
right.
A human being with a perfect synaptic network, but the wrong learned system of behavior will destroy itself and others just because of how it is created, how it is working. So the glitch could be seen as an erroneous way in the evolution of the brain to interpret data. So
okay.
Probably due to our speed in our language, we developed a language and a language system that is very, very symbolic and very, very advanced compared to other mammals, for instance. But inherent with this great gift that we have, which is self-perception and cognition, we also have this double-edged sword that brings us into possible self-destruction because of the way the brain learns. There's a glitch in the way it learns from experiences. It learns in a biased way.
Okay. All right. So that was kind of interesting. While you're telling me this, you're saying, well, we have this fantastic ability to kind of almost like create our own language and to interpret things and to kind of grow beyond what it is. And the whole time that you're saying this, I'm going, yeah, we can make stuff up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We can create philosophies, religions, and we also create racism. We also create conflict. We create bridges. We create disease. We create pollution, and we create the cure for pollution. We're very much creators.
It seems like one of our biggest in the world is the ability to create, and at the same time, it's also one of the things that can really, really restrict us in development as well, according to what I'm reading in the book.
Perfectly so, exactly. And there were many metaphors the ancients used in history to try to explain this concept, but if not understood, this ability to understand, to process data can be very destructive, can be very dangerous for the entire human population. Not only human population, but nature. Imagine you want to do something for the environment. You always have to consider that without humans, the environment will adjust to temperature, and animals will adjust through biological mutation. Plants will do the same. But in the very short span of time that man had power over technology and radiation and splitting the atom, electricity, and so forth, what he obtained is a threat for the entire planet. And this stems only from its way of working with his brain.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because we say that we're trying to save the planet, but actually we're just trying to save ourselves at times. you know, the planet is going to continue, just like you said. People, you know, animals, everything else. The only question is, will we still be here?
Exactly. Yeah. Very important, because for everything that has to do with social and ecological environments, anyone that wants a better future, even for the children, must get involved into this understanding that the brain has a specific way of operating, and there are neurobiological causes for its actions, even when we're analyzing negative action. And you can see a person that uses in his life too much alcohol or smoke, and they will get unhealthy because of their behavior. Now, if you enlarge this to a bigger scale, you'll see what the world is doing right now.
I totally agree. All right, so now we're talking about your book, the Evolutionary Glitch, or actually we're just talking about life, but you've written the book, The Evolutionary Glitch, and anybody who's kind of wants to go out and you know, find out some more information about it and actually purchase it, I would recommend it. It's got a lot of information in here. You can go to www.theevolutionaryglitch.com. So that's evolutionary with GLITCH.com. All right. A couple more questions, because there's a few things here. A lot of books that I read tell me everything that's wrong. So they're really good at telling me, kind of like, okay, you know, your life stinks, and this is why your life stinks. In your book, are you also discussing things that can empower or improve on the stuff that you've identified?
Absolutely, because once you locate what is wrong, you always need to find how to fix it. This is principally the element of diagnosis in medicine. You diagnose first, and then you have a therapy that follows your diagnosis. And then you have an estimate of possible reaction, which is the prognosis. In this way, the very important part of the process is the diagnosis, because you need to make sure, for instance, in a case of infection, that the patient has been infected, so there is trace of an infection, for instance, a viral infection, through the study of antibodies. And then you put your energy into finding a cure for this infection. Now, what we're talking about here is a similar thing. It's like an infection. There's a chapter of the book, The Evolutionary Glitch, where I describe this kind of passage of wrong information as viral minds or viral psyche, so that a person can be influenced and conditioned.
Yeah, you actually, it's uprooting a mental virus.
Yeah.
You know, I was going, wow, okay, now this sounds really, really intense when you start bringing up a mental virus.
Yes. This topic of the mental virus has also been studied, if we can say, by scientists, and they came up with a name for it, which is memetics, similar to genetics, but we're not studying the genes and their capacity to transmit life, but we're studying words and concepts, ideas that can be influential, but also viral. They can be transmitted to others. They can influence and sometimes destroy the same organism that hosted this idea. And you don't need much further experiment. You just need a book of history, and you study what human beings did to each other. And you understand that there is something wrong. There is definitely something wrong in human behavior. But they also tried, like Buddhism, for instance, or Taoism, to warn us and to guide us towards the cure of this phenomenon. So we know that human being has a problem of behavior, and this behavior is rooted in the way his brain works. And what is the cure then? So in the book, we're trying to give examples of past philosophies and how they dealt with it, and why sometimes they were not successful and why other times they were highly successful. And everything has to do with the basic enhancement of somebody's nature. Just like if you consider a human body, most of the times the infection, the viral infection or bacterial infection, will take place if the immunity is low. So in the mind, the infection or the dysfunctional state takes place when the mental immunity or the mental strength is low. So part of the therapy, if you can call it this way, part of the approach would be to increase personal nature and your orientation, your goal in life. So whatever you feel like your goal is in your life, that will be the principal strengthening factor that will reduce the power of exogenous conditioning, external conditioning.
All right, so this is one of the things I really like about this is first of all, you started out with kind of knowing yourself a little bit first, you know, to where you're trying to get the person that's reading the book to become kind of more conscious and do the groundwork so that they can examine things themselves to identify areas that they want to grow and they want to develop or maybe that they just want to even get rid of, right?
Yes. Because the first point to consider in mental and physical health is a person's stance. Where is this person at the moment in life?
Right.
Is he a father? Is he a grandfather? Is he 25? Is he 95? And it's evolution as well, but every human being has an internal individual evolution. So when they're children, they follow certain rules of development. When a person grows, they will be influenced by other hormones and by other situation. They will respond to the same stimuli of the environment in very different way according to their age, but also according to the place where they live, the temperature. But very importantly, they in the country where they live or in the society where they live, they will be exposed to thousands of this little messages, little bits, units of culture that will be just as much influential as the food they eat. And this wrong information can also cause a psychosomatic disease. It can cause disharmony. It can cause depression, which is a modern disease. It's more and more common to see very young people very depressed, in a state of psychological disharmony, disorder. So it's very important to understand what society, what environment is to them, and to start with the right foot, which is self-challenge, not much self-help, because sometimes you're giving information that are too, how can I say, they can take you a bit off track. They don't consider the inherent tendency of the human mind to self-confirm. So a person that has many defects, if self-confirms only the good parts, the good self-image, will always discard any critical examination of his work or his behavior and will always try to reconfirm his goodness.
Well, and I found that what they'll do is they'll accept it as who they are and just make an excuse for it.
Exactly.
So, you know that's my personal... It's very, very... it is. It's very basic. That's why we teach psychology and sociology. And I remember when I took them both at the same time, they loved fighting against each other because you know, the one believed they were right, but the truth of the matter is, it's a mixture. It's not only who we are, but it's where we live as well, in the environment that we've been brought up in the environment that we need to kind of survive in, you know. And I see it here in Los Angeles all the time between, you know, we have the movie stars that are living in one kind of life, and then you have the gang people living in a totally different life, but they're in the same area. It's just two separate lives.
Exactly. Two separate worlds altogether. Yeah. Two separate. Yeah. But
we ought to switch them. See what happens.
Your
next chapter on is, so the first thing is look about knowing yourself. So you teach people kind of ways to become conscious of who they are, what they are, and everything, and then you teach to kind of go out and look at, I like how you put this, their foes, know thy foes. But you go from there. I kind of want to skip over this because you've labeled something in a different way than from my studies and stuff that I really like, and it's the glitch itself, but you have, like, it looks like there's six different personas. Tell me what a persona is.
Yes. When we talked about this neural maps, which are basically the map of reality that any human being has constructed, brick after brick, neuron after neuron, connection after connection, you're exposed to a certain mask that has actually a shape, a depth, for instance, and then an extension. And generally, it occupies a specific part of the brain, which is the frontal lobes. Now, this mask is different, and it will react exposed to a specific threat or danger in a very different way. For instance, if you challenge a lion directly, a lion will attack you. If you challenge a bird, probably, the bird will try to escape. Other animals will try to hide into the environment with camouflage. So every different structure, when it becomes isolated from the body itself sustained, and it behaves very much like a new entity that has a defense mechanism. This is why people are very touchy and very defensive about their beliefs, say religious beliefs. So if you try, and this is an experiment you can do every day, if you try to challenge another person's core belief, they will react with their defense mechanism, which might be aggressivity, or it might be suspicion, and so on. So it's always about knowing what kind of persona or mask. Persona derives from, the term persona derives from the Greek word that means actually a mask. Something you use to hide, something that you build that has no expressivity in itself. It doesn't change much, but it maintains the usual reactivity or usual activity. So this neural pattern that forms in the brain actually takes life, and it is exactly what the ancient Indians in the Vedic texts or the Buddhists were describing as ahamkara, or the ego. The psychologists call it the ego, the way we perceive individually life. But this network is very much biased, and it's different. So if you have another person that thinks like you, you will actually share information. You will feel understood because you're speaking the same language. You have the same reactivity. For instance, you're very active, and you cannot stand people that are passive and lazy. But other people that are very pensive and they like to think twice about everything will look at those people that are very fast and active as impulsive. And so they will not understand each other. So the quarrel might start when you have the same fact and different personalities that will try to judge it. So you will very easily lose track of what is true or not. And you will see that actually what we perceive as truth is our personal understanding of it, is our biased understanding of it. And we define in the book, there are many typologies, but six main typologies, just to make it easier, because they're very easy to identify. There might be more, but sometimes in a model, it's easier to simplify. So this is a simplified model to understand that there are different ways of reacting to the same threat or stimulus.
So why would I want to identify my persona? What benefits are going to give me?
For instance, I will see that a person that is very robust. I give you an analogy with the body. Very robust, with big bones and strong joints, and maybe a bit more fat, but very stout. They can be very good rugby players, but they will have some problem if they want to become ballet dancers. So,
okay.
when you see a specificity in the body or in the shape, you will also recognize that there are certain pattern in people's action and certain limits, certain tendencies. So it's important to know what you are in relation to others. It's important to know your function, how the brain works in your case and also in other people's case, so that you might be able to understand them, to better understand them.
All right. So would this be compared to because we've heard this phrase a lot, personality type indicators. So like the Myers-Briggs personality type, I've lost count how many different ways that somebody has actually been able to categorize and put somebody into a specific category. Would this be what makes this different than one of those?
Here, what makes it different is the actual definition of the shape of these connections, of these neural patterns. So in personality analysis, you will have to very much deduce, to extract the behavior according to the effects of this various actions that the person performs. In a Myers-Briggs or in an analysis, you will ask the person to answer certain questions with a form. In this case, what you analyze is the manifold conditioning or the history. You actually backtrack. You create a reverse engineering of this person's life to understand what condition it's like. So this personality is being created, brought up through various actions and environments, and now it is affecting the life of this person in a certain way. You will analyze everything that is a sign in the environment, everything that this person has done in the environment, instead of analyzing the person through questions. You won't actually question the person. You will analyze what the person has done or is doing to himself, to others in the environment, and then you will analyze the speed of movements, the voice. It's pretty much a profiling system.
Okay, so in the book itself, if I'm reading the book, all right, which I am reading the book,
okay.
But in reading the book, then it will provide me the tools so that I can identify my persona.
Yes, it will give you these tools and also the tools to analyze the events that led to the creation of this persona. Always because we're talking about a situation that is not desirable. So you might think of all your mistakes, all your deficiencies, everything that you cannot do properly, everything that becomes a problem, and this has originated. It has been created. It stems from one point, one event or a set of neurons that arranged in a specific shape and are now recreating the same situation over and over. So if a person has been abandoned, for instance, and this caused a sense of rejection, a sense of despair, which, by the way, you can also measure through the tracking of a specific hormone, which is called oxytocin. But if you track this event and you understand what created the basic significant event, then you will see, you'll break the patterns that a normal person will try to reinstate every time. So you will break the pattern of wrong behavior.
Okay, so my question is this. I identify my persona.
Right.
Now, is there, what can I do about it?
The persona, you can put the persona as the culprit, if you like. You might think of all the problems that you might experience as tied to one cause. So, if you get rid of this nucleus, of this core, you will see the disappearance, the absence of these negative patterns that always try to reform, try to take control over another. So, these problems that were created up to this point will not exist anymore if you delete the core of it.
Oh, okay. All right. So, and I guess my question really is here, is there any exercises or anything that's in the book that will help somebody to go through this?
Absolutely, yes. And they are inspired by a process that was very famous many years ago, but it was interpreted as something else, which is called alchemy. The philosophy of alchemy is very ancient. It was known in China 2,000 years before Christ, and in Egypt, and then in India. But the concept of alchemy is chosen in this book as an analogy to express what happens to a person that is trying to get rid of the core of his own problems, and the phases. The first phase that the ancient alchemists were describing. And we're talking about not transforming metals into gold here. That's an analogy.
Okay, good. Yeah, I do a magic trick for that. Okay.
We're talking about the real philosophy that was behind this, and was
okay.
the coagulation of all the problems that the person might have and might create for the future into one state, which they called the blackening or the negredo, and then the processing of this phase into something that creates a push into human life. So the way to counteract this problem that was pointed out many years ago, many thousands of years ago, also came with a specific strategy to handle it. And this strategy is described in the book, in the chapter Removing the Mask. And it has to do with interpreting many of the past conditionings and events that happen to the person, and to find the common source of, or origin. You can imagine this as a curtain that is flowing down, and it's sustained by a ring. If you cut the ring, all the curtains will come down, so you don't have to cut starting from the bottom. You go to the first event, and you elaborate, you process the first conditioning event, which is the initial one normally.
Okay. All right. So, what is the major thing that you want your reader to get out of the evolution?
Okay. One very important thing is that we don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. So we superimpose our reality onto the world. So if our reality is neurotic, is anxious, is problematic, we're actually casting off this this appearance, this behavior on the world. So it is a very good opportunity for every human being, but also a sort of duty to improve ourselves in order to have a better environment, a better social and ecological environment for us and for others. So the call here is for all those people that really want to do something, make a change. And there are millions of people that really, honestly want to make a change. And this is a proposal. So in order to save the environment or change the world around and make it a better environment where to live, there is a way to start, and it's starting from yourself. But starting it from a very biological perspective, less philosophical and more biological, with specific stages and with specific actions. So if you really want to help your environment and yourself, you should start with a self-challenge, which is a bit more than self-help. It's a push towards a better situation instead of just a very relaxing trip. I think because every time you need to achieve something in life, you will discover that you'll have to input some energy. So in order to rise above the root of your problems, you need to push towards this better state. But you need to know the various problems you can encounter, the various sabotages, the adversaries, exactly know thy foe. And in doing so, if you have a map, you're much more likely to succeed.
Okay, all right. So this, your vision of the evolutionary glitch, your inspiration, is not only just empower somebody to improve their life, but your, from what I just heard, that if we start with ourselves, if we actually start to make the change within ourselves, then we basically change the world that we're living in.
Exactly. But in a very pragmatic way, not philosophically. I'm talking about simple things, simple actions, interactions with other human beings, or creation of something functional relationships or functional health, eco-sustainable life. I'm talking about something real, possible, not just philosophical.
Well, yeah. I'm not. That's the whole thing. We're talking about. You're talking about. If we change to where we don't see war as an option, then there is no war.
Exactly.
You know, so and it's not philosophical at all. It's just the truth. The reason that we have some of the things that we have in the world is because there's people that believe that that is something they need or that we have to have, right?
Yes, and also, in order to have a war, you need two opponents. You need two different systems competing, fighting, and that is created only through isolation. If isolation disappears, there's only a situation of cooperation. There cannot be deception or lie or corruption. There cannot be pollution, because if a human being wants to survive and wants survival for the offspring, it's very logical to think to solve it. The fact that it's not solved, actually it's increased and it's more manipulated, really tells us that the problem of the human mind has not been solved. It's still there, despite of the psychology, despite of all the methods that we have been used, it hasn't been solved.
Right.
So,
okay.
The general idea is really to start with this self-challenge, and to go through a process that will take the sense of I, the sense of ego, the persona, and will detach it, even for a while, just to give an idea of what it is to live without a personal point of view, a personal cognition. And this is what the ancients, even the Buddhists today, call enlightenment. A moment where you have no personal perception. So you have every perception merged together, but you're not filtering through only one channel, which is a personal filter, a biased filter.
It seems like no matter what culture, no matter what religion, no matter what part of history goes, the same thing is always taught and preached as being a place to go to. You know, we say Buddhist a lot. You know, that's a Buddhist principle. But at the same, you know, there's people that are doing a simple act of meditation in order to get into that, to separate themselves from their emotional kind of ego, in order to experience the world at a whole new kind of level. You know, so. Yeah, it's not really an unfamiliar thing. It's just I think we make it harder than what it really is to do. Does that make sense?
Yes. Also, it appears to be simple, but it is more difficult when you have many hidden traps. So if you think about walking a field will be just fine. You have to walk from one end to the field to the other. But if in the field somebody else put mines and holes and traps, that will be more difficult. And so the best thing you can do is to search for a map of the field, the extension of the field, and search for the locations of the threats so that you can go around them. And this is something that is not explained.
I totally agree. And as you're saying this, I was going, no, I'm just going to go in a different direction. you know, someone wants to put mines out in that field, hey, they can keep the field. I don't need that, man.
Exactly.
I'll go in the lake.
You go through the lake. And
it's
very important to understand this specific biased condition that we use to interpret everything in order to overcome it. When you understand your limits, you can overcome it. If you deny your limits, actually you fail to see it, and therefore they will be maintained. So we can say that observing your limits and knowing your limits means to know your strengths.
Right.
This is the point. This is where we start. The evolutionary glitch is about a limit that every human being has and every human being is born with, apart from very few exceptions. We're all endowed. We're all possessing this particular mechanism. And it can be very detrimental for certain people. So we start from our limits, and by overcoming these limits, we enter a completely new world, which is...
Okay, so now, all right, your website, theevolutionaryglitch.com, because that's
yes.
What we've been talking about this, you know, for the show, is different kind of ideas and ways to actually improve, take charge of our life, and reach that enlightenment. I love the word enlightened. You know, anytime that we can become enlightened, we just feel better. You know, it's almost like we're lighter anyways, and we get more energy, and life is just a heck of a lot more fun. So is there any other, what's on the website? I haven't even went to the website. What's on the evolutionaryglitch.com?
There are a few articles where we discuss very practical problems and possible questions that people might come up with, and the real applications of this, because when you think about this title, The Evolution of Glitch, it might be not practical enough, but actually there are many ways to apply it, and in a very genuine way, through experiences of other people that have gone through the process, you might learn something more of yourself, you might learn something more of how to communicate with others. But all these little experiences are enough sometimes, just like in Zen Buddhism, for instance, to free the mind from a conditioned state.
Okay, you're offering 20% off on ordering a copy?
Yes.
I brought it up.
All right, thank you. If the books are before the 20th of February, they're available at 20% discount.
All right, fantastic. Okay, we have just a few seconds left, so Albert, thank you very much for telling us about the evolutionary glitch. I love reading it. It's a fantastic. It's actually a very, very informative book.
Thank you very much.
On the show.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
All right. And, next week, tune in for another episode on Wednesday from 10 to 11 for Mind of the Magi. And we'll have somebody else, I don't know if they're going to be able to live up to you, Albert. You were fantastic. A lot of great information. All right. I'll see everyone next week. Have a great day. Bye.
Bye.